So first of all, I just turned the recording on. So I want you to know, I just turned the recording on. So okay. Yeah, because it is a meeting. We'll talk about whatever we want to talk about.
Okay.
So yes, I agree 100%. So I think in the current, and I'm really fascinated with what work you've already done in this. I think in the current space, the service itself there, in order to make this work, there'd have to be a bunch of pretty powerful rules. Like the service probably needs to be idempotent. It needs to be reversible, right? It needs to be, there's definitely gonna be some collision and failure challenges. But I think what we can do for today is we can write a pretty sophisticated service with internal code. Like the service doesn't have to learn. The service doesn't have to evolve. It just has to do, right? So I think that can get us past a handful of challenges that we see in the real world, in real swarms, right? So I think I can write a service that can do math and just leave it at that. I can write a service that can read a record, or I can write a service that can write a record. There's definitely a lot of meta that has to go with it. One of the people at the event has come up with a pretty nice pattern that is all the metadata for a particular signifier, for a particular token. It can actually just be in another document somewhere. There's a link that says, you're supposed to do math. Here's the mathematical equation. Here's the input data. Here's the output data. Yeah. You can bury a lot of stuff somewhere else. And then you can make that service very tightly coupled to the data model. But if you keep it small, I think it's still okay, because not everybody has to share the same data model. The data model can be very specific to each service. It's just the metadata that they share and the tokens that they have to share. So I'm really curious if you've done some of this work already, especially because I'm trying to avoid the assembly line, because I want to avoid sequence. Some sequence may just happen to occur because of the way tokens are written, but I don't want to depend on it. So your experience in this would be really helpful.
Actually, it was one course that was part of my studies. So I just completed, and I did not any research on this. But
well, you took a course. I didn't take a course, so you're good.
Okay. So, but what you are saying is that there are, there are two approaches. Today they are called orchestration or choreography. And right. I think you have more choreography on your mind, that those agents, that they somehow know where are their marks. So they stand up on their marks and start to dance. And I don't think anyone, as far as I know, solve it, because, and regarding the data, I think we have everything. We have JSON-LD, we have ALPS, we have many other formats how to describe. And the hard part is how to make those agents exchange and understand each other and find their place in the process.
Yes.
And perhaps maybe the easier start would be identify a goal. I mean, something very simple, what to solve with this. And then we can look on all those algorithms and say, hey, for example, it's perfect for swarm intelligence, or it's good for ant colonies, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we can demonstrate it, because what I learned, maybe it was 10 years ago, that all those algorithms, they have their specific domain where they shine. I mean, none of those algorithms can solve everything. I mean, some algorithms shine for solving this kind of issues, and some for those. Maybe there is some approach like do hybrid solution or something like it.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep.
So I'm just thinking cloudly.
No. I think that's really good. I think that's I agree with you for the most part. Is the idea that you're not going to solve everything with just one thing. You're probably going to need to mix and match. This hybrid idea, I think, is really, really good. And the kind of thing that I'm imagining is also not very, it's not very speedy. It's not very reactive. The way I'm imagining it right now, it's very much in this sort of a call and response classic approach. So it's not streaming events and stuff like that. It could definitely be applied. So there are certainly a whole bunch of areas where what I'm thinking about won't work. A bunch of people that I talked with last week are actually focusing on, I forget the word they use, you know, a parallel between virtual world and real world, right? They want to move a robot arm. They want to sort of give intelligence to a robotic device to solve a problem in the real world. So what I'm describing is not going to be very practical for that either, because there's not enough, the reaction time is too long to like drive a car or, you know, solve a problem or something like that in that sense. So there's definitely going to have to be lots of hybrid-y stuff to it. So I think for me, what was really encouraging for me is 10 years ago when I was thinking about this, I really didn't have a lot of exposure to the current multi-agent system thinking, and what I knew about it was fairly limited. So I thought there was an awful lot of magic happening, you know, between these steps. So in that time, I've worked on my little maze patterns, the ALP stuff, and so it's edged along. But then meeting with these people last week, just showed me a whole bunch of other research that I hadn't actually seen, which solves a bunch of problems as well as adds a bunch of new challenges. So I just got really excited, and it's been a while since I was really excited about something. So it's lucky for me, I can keep puttering away and enjoy myself at this, even though there's no direct business benefit anytime soon, which is
fine. I love it, really. I think it's not about ALPS anymore. It's basically about hypermedia and nonlinear approach to access information, right?
Yeah.
And ALP is just a representation of it.
Yes. And one of the things that I also noticed last week is when I showed my super simple, you know, XML version of this, not JSON-LD, not RDF, there were a bunch of people who were like, oh, holy smokes. This is actually really good. You know, so when you sort of peeled away the technology stack and you just showed people examples of it working, they got excited as well, which was sort of interesting to me. So like you're saying, like these are all formats and languages. People need to not be so tied just to one of those, but to focus on what's possible, what you can really do. And I was just really encouraged by that as well. So it made it seem like, well, yeah, I have something to contribute, even though I'm not an RDFS nerd, a semantic web nerd. So that was exciting as well. So I've gotten lots of good feedback, and that's helpful. Handful of people forked my stuff and built some of their RDF versions of it, which is also very encouraging. Turned out to be, it was real easy. So I just had fun. Just had lots of fun.
Yeah. And did someone say something like that your notation is simpler or easier than JSON-LD? Because that's my take that I learned recently, that it's much easier to describe hypermedia, the links and everything with ALPS. But what's more surprising to me, it's much easier to describe existing services with ALPS than starting writing JSON-LD from scratch. I was helping a few guys from Paris. They work on ontologies for caves. I don't know how to call that. They classify caves and everything.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Finding caves and Okay. Did someone mention it?
I have to be honest. It was a sort of a side discussion. Okay. And the discussion went basically like, I actually never thought about the fact that you could do this this quickly and easily. But honestly, the community is really deeply embedded with with this. And it's hard to extract. So what encouraged me was how quickly some of the PhD students just simply converted my little simple XML version to RDF.
Yeah.
And then wrote a client really quickly. So it encouraged me that they saw, oh, this is pretty easy to convert, but there isn't a lot of encouragement right now for saying, yeah, I guess we don't need JSON-LD. We could do it with this instead.
I didn't say that. I think JSON-LD is great. I see more those technologies in parallel. That ALPS is much better for those use cases and JSON-LD, because you are right. I absolutely agree that RDF community is quite closed and maybe isolated, and what was the worst surprise? It doesn't seem they want some input from outsiders, because that was my original idea. IPA community is isolated and closed as well. And a year ago, I was thinking like, hey, let's make a bridge. I will start talking with those two groups, but there is no interest. That's my biggest disappointment. Every time I speak with RDF guys, they are like, oh, API, you have OAS, it's good enough, right? And API guys, they hate JSON-LD and hate RDF.
it's amazing how tightly held those points of view are, right? So I agree with you 100%. And I did the same kind of thing about 10 years ago with RDF. I spent some time with RDF and RDF browser. I don't know if you remember the RDF browser project, but it's a long-standing effort. It was originally Tim Berners-Lee was actually doing work himself on it, and got some other people involved in it and trying to create a sort of a generic browser for RDF. But there's just so little to hang your hat on, right? That it was really, really tough. So I worked on it for about 6 months. It was all written in C, and it was hard for me to contribute. But that's when I learned also, like, any kind of movement away from the technology stack to stick to principles but change technology was really not very successful. So I had to stop out, because it was too hard for me. I mean, there's just the challenges are just too high for me. But anyway, it was a fun week. It got me excited. I ended up writing up, you know, a couple of thousand words this past week on what I think I'd like to see. And that gives me enough energy for another year or so to play around with this a little bit more. So
that's cool.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And ALPS is a big part of it.
It's actually very interesting how the idea of ALPS is constantly evolving. But as I said, it's at the core is hypermedia. So that's all about hypermedia and non-linear access. Thank you for sharing.
Oh yeah, you made a really good point earlier that I wanted to catch up on, and that is that ALPS is good for describing existing systems, existing implementations. And that was actually a really important goal for Leonard when we were working on the format. Leonard focused very much on the idea of like, let's make it so that it can actually describe what is already happening in the world, rather than have to get everybody to start changing the way they do things. So to hear you say that is actually another reminder that that really was one of the key goals. That's why Leonard worked to do the schema.org translations and things like that. He said, let's find out, like, how difficult is it to describe the exact same things? So he would like to hear that. I'll actually just pass that along. He doesn't participate a lot in social media stuff, but I'll pass that along to him, because I think he'd appreciate that comment very much. That's a good idea.
It's on my stack. I don't know when I will finish it, but I was playing with it, I was like, it would be cool to generate JSON-LD context from ALPS.
Yes. If I understood JSON-LD better, that's definitely what I would want to be doing, because that's a bit of a bridge, right, between the JSON API community and the semantic community.
Actually, I think the RDF guys, the origin draft of JSON LD 1.0, it was meant to be used by APIs, but then the RDF guys, they took over the work and they redesigned it to match their needs. So for real-time API processing, JSON LD is quite heavy and it's hard to optimize it. And it seems to be even overcomplicated because those guys, they are mathematicians. And that's the same story with Semantic Web. It's built by mathematicians. There is a lot of great concept, great theories inside, but it's very hard to work with it. And you need quite a lot of time to understand all the details and all the tricks. I lost my idea, sorry.
Well, but I think the thing that a lot of semantic web suffers is really a lack of good tooling. When the math is hard, when the concepts are tricky, then I need a really good tool to help me solve that. And there just aren't good tools.
Yeah, that was basically what I forgot to say as the last thing. I just think that JSON LD is not solution. And I mean 100% solution. It's great for RDF guys, and then you use it. 90% I see it from use of my library. They use it just to export data from RDF to JSON and then import it. Nothing else.
Really?
It's just a transportation, most of it, 90%.
Yeah.
It's just a transportation format for them, to JSON LD. I think there is the winning technology. It will be something in between, something maybe a little bit heavier than ALPS, but much lighter than JSON LD.
Yep. I think that's right. And I think the other thing that Bunny and I were really thinking about when we were talking about ALPS is we really wanted ALPS to, we didn't want ALPS to be thought of as a runtime format. We wanted it to be thought of as a kind of a design or a description format. And that, sometimes when I get into those discussions, that gets a little tricky too. People sort of blend OpenAPI and HTML and JSON LD kind of all into the same bucket. And I've always seen them as very different, stacks. Like this is the description stack. This is the definition stack. This is the runtime stack, the representation stack.
Perfect.
And that's a distinction that not a lot of people are comfortable with, really. So, and again, that's tooling too, right? It's like making it easy to do one thing and another. I had a short discussion on accept headers last week too. The RDF community really doesn't think that the whole idea of negotiating a format at runtime is a reasonable behavior. It has a lot to do with their own history of not using content negotiation wisely in early RDF, so that you'd have a hard time knowing what's a thing and what's a concept and all this other stuff. So that becomes, it's sort of like a trigger. I kind of like stepped on a landmine last week when I started talking about negotiating types.
Yeah, you are perfectly right. Sometimes the product, the linked data platform, etc., they totally ignore REST and HTTP and all those techniques. And then we are back at the discussion that those two communities, they totally ignore each other.
Which I always found so surprising, since Tim really was sort of one of the fathers of HTTP.
I think I met Andink regularly at his SolidWorks meeting. It's about this project, the solid stuff, and describing data, and they use JSON LD heavily. But then again, they developed their APIs supposed to be designed exactly in the same way by everyone who would like to contribute to this platform. I don't know why.
I don't either. It just amazes me that continues to be the story. But that's just the way it is.
But sometimes I'm getting the impression that those guys, the RDF guys, they are very good at those rule systems and reasoning. They simply don't care. They just want to have everything like graph, graph in database. And and that's actually how they use JSON-LD and some stuff, just to import, export. And now I'm in my world and I can do something.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. I got everybody here. Now I can do something, and then eventually I'll export it out. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I have great ontologies, and mine are better than yours. And actually, that's I learned that recently. I was watching several education lessons from, I forgot the guy's name, but he's quite a name in ontology field. And he started his lesson that there are thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of ontologies, but just few of them are really good and useful. So. Yeah, but it makes sense, because you can imagine like everyone of us trying to describe relations between stuff from our point of view. So,
And then I think one of the other telling elements in keeping this sort of closed world view working is how important the discussion of what is it? They actually created a word, which is the one that says it's like a synonym. What do they say? What do they have this feature where this word means this word?
A synonym.
Yeah, but they have a particular construct in RDF, right? Which is, it's not as is or something, but it's some other, like relationship, so that you know when I use my word, you can use your word. Neither one of us has to change anything. And then we write this other little bridge that basically says,
I don't know how to call it.
Man. Anyway, it was a long drawn out conceptual discussion. And really the discussion was all how we could work out a way to make sure that neither one of us had to change our ontology.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, so it's your ontology. So. Yeah, it comes up sometimes in the Alps. Actually, it came up for a while. Lenny and I were getting feedback that we need to adopt the pattern that RDF uses.
I will try it. Someone to describe relationships between RDF and Alps. I don't think that's the real issue.
No, I don't think so either, really. There are so many ways that you could possibly do this. So I'm just interested in, more than anything else, I've always been interested in giving people a way to describe what they're doing rather than giving people a way to do something.
Yeah.
In other words, you decide what you want to do. I just like to be able to give you a tool or a device that makes that easier for you to do that. But that's always been my sort of approach.
And I have it as one slide in the Alps Illustrated presentation, but no one was there. I was surprised that I'm more and more thinking there won't be one ontology or format or interface describing a class of services or agents. I more believe that there will be many, many different agents or interfaces doing the same thing with total different interface, but the key is to understand it, and that's it. That there is no need to try to unify it, and I don't think it will ever work. It never worked to try unify something, and that's actually what's the basic idea of RDF or how it looks, how they promote it. That you will describe anything, you will choose the right ontology, and that's the great stuff. So. The idea about the agents, and I think we spoke about it many years ago, and you were describing it like you have several animals on your backyard, and you call them and they do something, and every of them can do something a little bit different.
This idea of the pets theory, right? Like I can train a pet and they're all cats, but they all do one thing. As a group, it looks like there's this really talented cat, but it's really not true. There's just these individuals.
I like this idea. I just don't have any other idea, any follow up on my side. If I would have, I would be doing that. But also, you can have small agents. You can call them translators, to just serving the function to translate for the other agents.
That's right. Yes, I definitely see that. I definitely see that as a possibility. That eventually, if you can get these into small, sort of like almost reactive little agents,
you can start to
create a much richer landscape where people don't really know. Because that sort of goes back to my little pheromone or token scheme.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. You just say, it's I just need somebody to do this. And I really wanted to work hard. I got so frustrated when I was working on this. Originally, I thought this would all be queues, right? You just put a thing in a queue and eventually somebody takes it out of the queue.
Yeah.
The problem is queues sort of affect like order of things, right? And I'm annoyed. Annoyed by that. I don't want it to be linear. I want it to be, more open.
Agree.
Right? So
queues are linear and we would like to be hypermedial.
Right. It seems to me that a document that has dozens and dozens of links for work to do is just as powerful, if not more powerful, than a queue that says, I have 12 things in, pop one off. I think I just want to create a space. And it could be one document. The way I'm thinking about this now is I really think that even the signals, the tokens, they're actually stateful elements. Right.
Originally
I thought they were just like stateless markers, but I think they have to have their own sort of life cycle and their own sort of creative effort. If there's a job to be done, eventually that job probably, if it's never done, it needs to turn into something else. Like if it's abandoned, so that it doesn't just sit there forever. If you start a job and it should only take X amount of time, I'm not going to wait any longer. It should convert into something else. So I think. Yeah. You have to sort of program the tokens as little life forms. You have to program each service as a life form. And then you have to program wherever they all hang out as a sort of a life form too. And I think there's also, honestly, there's probably a whole bunch of adversarial things that you have to do as well. Things need to die. Things need to compete. You have to protect yourself against like dangerous things. Like, what I'm describing, this idea of you put a bunch of tokens in a space and wait for services, there's so much abuse that's possible. DDoS attacks and smuggling attacks. And I'm really, as I was working on this week, I'm actually starting to worry that what I'm doing is I'm creating this absolutely horrendous place where hackers could do terrible things.
I wouldn't be bothered by that. It's an issue you can solve later if you prove that your primary idea is workable.
I think that's right. I think you're correct.
And I was in the past. I was thinking about this actually. I got inspired by you that you have like public place. Mm-hmm. And everyone, all the agents, they can see the public, but they can monitor the whole public place. It's like a graph, a huge structure, and they can watch everything. But they don't need to, because they are dedicated to one concrete function. So instead of watching all the knowledge graph, they can just say, hey, if someone will add this pattern, like mean a relation between this and this and this, okay, I'm interested in it. I want to do something with that, but I never realize it. And it's basically what you are describing by the word token. I was just picturing like a pattern, like you can picture it like a regular expression, something much complicated, but functioning in the exact same way that, like you say, I'm accepting this and this at this, and if there will be some change, give it to me, and I will take a look. And then I take a look on this, and I understand you want to compute, for example, Fibonacci, something, and then I look at the data, and I see that I don't understand the data, but I understand what's your intent. So I will just add information to the graph. I need to translate it into those formats, because those two are formats I can understand. And someone else would catch on this pattern and say, hey, okay, I'm on it, I will do it for you. And when it's finished, there is another information added, new data. So you are triggered again to take a look. And now you see there are data I can understand, but there are all data I cannot understand. It's just idea I never did actually.
You know, this really, it's really.
But it's rule-based, it's rules-based.
Yes, it's all rule-based. So this is really kind of sparking a couple other things. I said to myself for the next couple of weeks, I was gonna kind of collect up some of this and put it in GitHub. If it's okay with you, I'm gonna share some stuff of some of what I'm writing now. It's really, okay. It's really not well thought out, but it sounds to me like you've touched on some of this already. So maybe you'll recognize some things right away and you can sort of help me. You can say, no, don't worry about that. That's not a problem. This, however, is. If it's okay, I'm gonna share something with you.
Yeah, sure, week or so. Sure.
I realize you may be busy and all, but when I hear you talk, and this has really been ever since you and I first started talking, when I hear you talk, you've done some of the same things I've thought about. So I think you have a lot to contribute, and I would just appreciate any feedback.
I would be happy to contribute if I can, but as I said, I'm more explorer than researcher, but I'm happy to contribute because I think we are on the same page from the very beginning. Yeah.
I think that's right. I think that's totally fine. Both of us, I think, are saying the same thing. We're not academics. We don't know all the research, but we've honestly, the two of us work every day trying to solve problems. So I think we may be pretty close, and who knows?
I think we are doing research, but I don't want to speak for you, but I'm doing more research by experimenting. By experiments.
Yes, I have this really sort of hypothesis point of view, right? Like, what if? Let's see, rather than sort of like building up.
Yeah, and then you create mice and learn something. And I think it's pretty valid, even if you don't write a huge document about this.
So here's the barrier of entry that I don't reach. I don't know LaTeX very well.
I work with LaTeX a lot, but it's not an issue. It's quite a very easy format. You will adopt it, but I don't think you need it because it's great. The results is great. I wrote my diploma thesis with LaTeX because it looks impressive when it's imprinted.
Yes.
It's very professional. But I think the most scientists, they use LaTeX because it has built-in support for mathematical equations.
So yes.
Because you can print it very nicely. And it's also based on, I forgot the guy name, but he's quite a big name from 60s, the guy who made it LaTeX. And I think he was behind Pascal as well and the structured languages. But yeah, LaTeX. Don't be worried about it.
Yeah,
it's very very old school syntax, more like it's GML, but nothing.
Yep.
Nothing
complicated. The other one that I think about is not only do I have trouble with LaTeX, but I have trouble with BibTeX, right? Citations. The first couple of papers I submitted like years and years ago were rejected because my citations were bad.
Yeah.
Right. And so I just never really got good at that stuff. But like you said, I'm not going to get too excited. I'm not going to get too worried. By the way, I think you mean the original the original creator was Leslie Lamport.
I was thinking about Knut. I don't know how you read
Knuth. Knuth as well.
Maybe you are right. Maybe he evolved it from his previous work, because I think this guy just started something like that, but it doesn't matter. And regarding cetacean, that's the biggest issue of today's scientific world, because you are actually, the metrics, how good scientist you are, is based on cetaceans, I don't know. Yep. Don't want to say what it is, because because if you start work on something really novel, then you wouldn't have a lot of cetaceans, because there is not much work. So and on the other side, as a researcher, and I spent 2 years as a PhD student, and I was fighting with that, you are forced to write something what's not good just to have citations. And there are, I don't want to be, there are even guys, and in goodwill, they are writing papers, they are using their citations, and they knew it's kind of fraud, but they are justifying it, because then they get money to do something really interesting. But if they would asking for the money for the project they would like to do, they won't get it.
Yeah,
the system is a little bit crippled by this. Yeah, so I would say don't worry,
that boat has sailed. I'm fine with it. So what are you doing? What can you share? I've been dominating this conversation
here. Not much out front, just the stuff we're describing. Because I had a little task to describe a few existing APIs with JSON-LD, and I started to do it with JSON-LD. And then I don't know why I wasn't thinking, but then I switched to Alps, because it was much, much easier to me. Just simple APIs. I have to say very simple APIs, but then I realized it's much easier to use Alps. And I was thinking like, hey, maybe I can write it in Alps and generate JSON LD context from Alps, but I don't implement it yet. I'm more experimenting still. I would like to find something what can be productized, but everyone would like to find something what can be productized. So I'm still experimenting.
Yep. I think everybody would like to find something, right? That like a great product, a great tool, a great addition. But hey, experiments to me are what really I enjoy most, honestly.
It's fun.
I don't actually have a very good track record for productizing things at all, even when I'm working on products.
Just one tool, so don't worry.
Yeah. Well, that's just fine. All right. Well, I have a bunch of stuff I should be doing. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Okay, I don't want to waste your time anymore. Please don't hesitate to share anything. As I said, I'm explorer and I'm happy to sail uncharted seas.
That's great. I really appreciate that. I'll put something together. I sort of have think time I spend, and this weekend is when I'll spend some time doing that. And I'll just share what I have, and anything you can offer would just be great if you can work it in. I just love to get some feedback. I appreciate your point of view.
And I'm happy to learn something and get inspired, as usual, Mike. Thank you.
All right, Philip. Thank you so much. Listen, let me just ask really quickly, how are things vaccine-wise where you are in China?
I think the discussion here is not about vaccine. We have one of the highest number in Europe. It's already 10% of more than 10% of population has been infected, but we have also one of the lowest dead rate. So today, here is actually just yesterday, the government introduced a new rules for lockdown, and but the people. The atmosphere is like that people don't like it, and I understand because the death rate is very low, and most of us we don't know about anyone who has died, so the atmosphere is maybe quite different than in the rest of Europe, that people are more like, hey, let's live with it, let's move on. And yesterday I went out to park and there were hundreds of people, and actually I love it because I need to live, I need to thrill something. I don't know, but I don't think we are in bad situation. I think the problem is that that there is no solution and people are getting tired and exhausted.
Yeah, the solution is
mental issues are raising.
The solution is not a simple one. Well, the solution is not an easy one, but it's a simple one, right? The solution is that we have to remove the disease, but we're not going to do that very easily. That's just the way it is, and the way that it typically works is through, you know, vaccinations and exposure. That's the way it works. And when it's at this scale, it's just a really complicated solution. So it's just going to take a lot of time. This will be with us all the time. So here in the US, the way they're talking to us is just expect to be taking vaccine shots, just like your flu shots. Just expect to be taking vaccine shots for this for years to come. It's just going to be part of what we do.
Yeah, we'll see. Actually, we'll see. My girlfriend's sister, she got it. She has an infant, 3 months old. The infant has it as well, but they are good. So see.
Yeah. So listen, just be safe. Take it easy. Enjoy the outdoors, but just be safe.
Yeah. You too. We are all fine and healthy, and I wish you to stay healthy as well.
See you
next week if you will have time.
I will be here next week.
Okay, perfect.
All right, see you. So long.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Mike.
Bye-bye.